harping on about harpies?
Hello, and welcome to the Saladcast. On Sunday, the 10th of August, 2025, I'm your host, Dan Train. Joining me today is Zachary Burgess.
Not harping on about harp.
And Robert Kemp.
Ka-ka!
What was that, the sound of
a harpy, I guess.
Related. Oh, a harpy.
Okay. Yeah, a crow-based harpy.
I guess it would be ka-ka, that was a combined exact answer.
But sounded like a chicken from Arrested Development.
What? <It's> a...
I mean, have you never seen that?
No.
There's like a running joke that everyone in the family has a different, like, you know, chicken. You are chicken. You know that. But they all do an insane, totally different bird sound, which sounds nothing like a chicken.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ka-ka. I don't know
where
what
does caca come from, though.
Because crows are just one car, right?
They're yeah,
car, car. I don't know. There's definitely some, like, I'm sure it's been done in a TV show or something, like caca in that particular way. It's like it's ringing in my head a little bit, but I can't pull it out right now. I don't know what the canonical harpy noise is, really.
Well, I don't know exactly what bird they're even usually based on. I say usually. Like in whatever Greek myth started it, what bird would that have been?
I guess
some Greek bird of prey, presumably.
Yeah, like fantasy bird styles always seem to be, like, eagle-based to me, right? Like,
well, yes, well, that is just generic bird of prey,
though. Yeah, yeah. Like, even... I was about to say centaurs, not centaurs. A griffin? I'm probably thinking griffin, like griffin wings. Or you can get winged centaurs in some things, right?
They yes, but then that's like a unicorn or whatever. Yeah, it's like goodbye, random other animals. Like, wings are not. There's like. The wings on horse based mythological beings can be a lot more different than just the wings on.
I suppose, yeah. But I guess what I was trying to say is that even those are quite eagle-ish, right? Generally.
Griffins, maybe, yes.
Yeah, they are, for sure.
Not on centaurs / unicorns with wings.
I suppose they're a bit more depiction of angel wing style.
Yes, they're pigeon wings.
What are those based on? Yeah, they just pigeons.
Doves, presumably.
Well, that's just it, isn't it? Because they're putting animals together, are they like roughly the right size to actually fit together? They don't like scale up pigeon wings and attach them to lions, do they? I suppose they go for eagles, which are roughly the right size, I guess.
Not really that close.
Not really, yeah, but better than superior to doves, I mean, I guess.
I guess the largest possible wing you can get, really.
Yeah. Albatross wings. Yeah, you'd think maybe the Greeks would have like seabirds, but I feel like harpies would be.
But they have enough other sea mythological creatures, don't they?
Do feathers scale up with wings generally, do you think? Like, I guess they are bigger, right? Feathers tend to be larger on bigger winged animals.
Oh, sure.
I'd say so, yeah.
I like the tines. What do you even call them? Like the little bits of the hairs of the feather, like the individual bits, are they thicker as well? Does everything
probably
scale
up? Depends on the kind of wing, like how fly, you know, how it flies.
Yeah.
Or how waterproof it is or whatever.
Yeah, what are they actually called? The bits of the feather that... Like an arrow.
Yeah, they like quills a little bit, like a hedgehog.
Would be the middle
or...
bit, right? Presumably.
Oh yeah, I guess I suppose you're right. Yeah, the quill would probably be the spine of the feather.
Right, the bit you used to write with.
The bit that is a quill, literally.
Yeah,
because that's probably where we stole the word from.
Yeah.
Barbs.
Yeah,
I feel like
okay.
Barbs are like spiky though and would do you harm.
I feel like maybe. I knew that.
Well, it's probably all evolved from the same thing, right? They probably actually were like spiky defenses at some point in ridiculously ancient evolution or whatever.
But I bet that must have been named before that was a theory.
Maybe.
Barbie. Either that or, you know, whoever was looking at a feather at the time was shouting to his wife, "Hey, Barbs!
Hey, Barbs! What are we going to call these?"
Well, that's a good name, honey.
Or they were listening to the Beach Boys or something.
No. Bob, 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 Bobs.
Presumably the actual answer is that it's Latin and it means something that doesn't actually mean like spiky thing like we think it does.
I guess, yeah. Yeah, maybe a barb isn't actually like a spike at all in a sort of harmful sense. Like, you know, it isn't barbed wire. That's what we associate with it. But
yeah. But now a barb is like figurative, isn't it? It's like when you insult someone or make a cutting remark, it's like a barb, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess. Probably thanks to barbed wire. Like,
That was probably before barbed wire, I would imagine.
What a barbed remark.
It's probably like Shakespearean, at least. Maybe. If not older.
Yeah. He was a bard. That's one letter off.
Yeah.
And that's why Come Shakespeare was so awesome.
And that's our traditional podcast words minute.
Yeah. What's going on?
It's the etymology ramble with absolutely no basis in fact.
Yeah, with no knowledge whatsoever, just guesses.
I mean, at least it sprang from like mythological creatures this time, which makes sense.
And should we talk about more mythological words? I don't know, we could make some up. Like quank.
That was what Ron tried to come up with, man.
Is that mythological? I mean, what's the myth supporting?
It's a duck crossed with something. Don't really want to know duck. What, though.
It's a duck engineer.
Really good at starting engines.
My suggestion.
For a mythological... So it's a mythological duck that goes around starting engines up.
Yeah, it's a duck engineer. The quank. Yeah. A dengie, if you will.
A what? A dengie?
A dengie. Duck engineer. He's a dengie.
Sounds like a fever.
Yeah. That's dengue.
Oh, dengue.
Fever. What was going on? I finished that there, Andor. There we go. Let's transition.
Oh, you did. Star Wars.
Star Wars. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting series that there too. It's a weird one. I don't think it. I think as I said before, I don't think it flows nearly as well as season one does. The pacing is weird.
I mean, they set themselves up for making it very difficult by having 1 year jumps between the arcs, the three episode arcs, right?
Well, yeah, some are three, some are four, some are just, there's one in one particular that just seems like a kind of one-off, like it's on its sort of stand, it's sort of on its own. They're sort of in the same time frame, but then isn't necessarily a setup to them. It's just like, okay, now we're doing this. It's a bit strange. Like when it's good, it's really good, but if you take it as a whole, it's kind of an interesting, a slightly inaccessible package at times.
What did you think of Bix being like, I've got to leave now because the writers can't figure out how to fit me into the last three episodes?
Yeah, pretty much. And by the way, this is why I guess I'm leaving, I suppose. They had to show a final scene just to be like, oh wait.
Yeah, I guess it had an explanation, even if it was very thin.
Yeah, I mean, her story was nothing throughout the whole thing, really, wasn't it? It was kind of.
Well, her aunt.
She was
kind
just
of,
there,
yeah.
But didn't she didn't really have weight or any kind of meaning particularly. It's like, if anything, it just meant that they Bix's existence meant that they could explain why Cassian didn't really do anything for 2/3 of the season.
That's a bit, yeah.
He just kind of turns up to places, does nothing, and leaves. Like
that was always my problem with Cassian Andor. in his own series, he's like one of the least interesting to me. Anyway,
he just rocks up and like, yeah, like Noam was getting really annoyed of it. Like at one point, it's just like he doesn't do anything.
I mean, that really annoyed me in the first arc of the second season, where it's like he immediately gets captured on the jungle planet that turns out to be whatever. And it's like he doesn't actually achieve anything.
No.
He does the initial TIE fighter escape, and then it's like, okay, we'll just plonk him here for the rest while we do the actual plot.
Yeah, there are certain characters that just seem to just end, if you know what I mean. Like, they don't have a good resolution, they don't have a good arc. Maybe that's the point. Like, their whole being ends up feeling pointless. I'm not sure. A lot of the character exits were really particularly well done, but maybe that's the point. Maybe it's supposed to come across as a bit messy.
I liked the Luthen end, and I really liked Claire.
Oh, yeah, but sure. Brilliant. Spoilers, I suppose, but yeah. That sequence is great. So it's kind of what I mean. It's definitely like when it's doing a proper sequence, and it is good. You know, they're well, very well made. Anyway, wasn't so sure about the uprising, shall we say, halfway through. That kind of came across as a bit, what's the point? Like, like, it's important to the story, but why we see it and what happens during it, it's like, it feels a little pointless.
I preferred the stuff on Coruscant later with Claire in the hospital, and also K2SO.
Like,
that was cool.
And the bit in the Senate, and they're like, that's cool as well.
Yeah, that was cool. There's some good stuff in there, but yeah, it's a bit more hit and miss than the first season.
I think it's just a slightly odd put together. It is no find some of these things with a lot of threads hard to follow anyway, and I have to admit, it is. This one was definitely harder to follow than most Star Wars.
Still don't fully get what was going on with Saw Gerrera.
No, I don't follow that particularly at all. And obviously the last episode is a little bit of a, I wouldn't say damp squib, that's perhaps a little bit too strong, but it's definitely a not as explosive finale as you might be expecting. It's because it's having to do the legwork to set up for Rogue One.
Yeah. But I suppose they always knew they'd had to do that, so yeah. That's the thing with prequels, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, or
Star Wars has plenty of those. I mean, Rogue One's a prequel. This is a prequel to that. The prequels are prequels.
The dolphins are monkeys. It was all right. Yeah. Didn't lie. It was all right. Yeah. All right. What?
I saw the Marvel film, I guess.
The Marvel film.
The current one, the Fantastic Four one.
Yeah.
Which they seem to be, like, sidestepping the whole you have to have seen a million films to understand what the hell is going on by just fully going multiverse and just saying, oh, we'll set an entire film in a different universe.
In a different place.
So you'd have to worry.
How many Reed Richards have we seen now? Like, probably four or five different variants, including Pedro Pascal's new incarnation. I don't know if we've seen one in the main universe, actually.
We haven't. I think there's one in... There's a cameo one, right, that's John Krasinski, right? That's in a different universe that we've seen already. Was that in a Deadpool film, or...?
Yeah. There was a Reed Richards in Deadpool and Wolverine, but he didn't actually any of the stretchy stuff.
That's right. Yeah. Because that had Professor Xavier from like the comics version, right? Oh, not comics. I mean the cartoon, 90s cartoon version, but played by Patrick Stewart, right?
Briefly.
It was a cameo. They start with this one with literally just a title or a text on the screen saying Earth 864 or whichever other Earth it is, and they just carry on from there, and you just understand by context clues that it's clearly not our Earth, because it's this kind of retro futuristic but also 1960s aesthetic throughout, which looks really cool.
But that's cool, gives them an excuse to do that.
I'm finding that a lot these days with some of these things. It's like the production design is sometimes absolutely amazing and impeccable, but, you know, the actual film is not so good sometimes, you know.
In this case, it was
totally fine.
That feels like modern Marvel all over.
Exactly. That goes all the way back. Like, I feel like that about the Star Wars prequels. Like, some of the production design is really good, but it's just a shame about the films. But yeah,
I don't know. There's almost something about even the Star Wars prequels, right? Episodes 1 to 3. There's even something about those that is a little more watchable, I think, than a lot of modern films, just in general. And it's probably been that way for like a decade now in my head. Like, there's just, I mean, there always was a lot of crap, don't get me wrong, but for some reason, like, old crap feels more stomachable than current crap.
Yeah. It's more what the old crap is more watchable than current crap. But I get, maybe that's because we're old.
It's a very real possibility because it sort of dawned on me the other day. Like, I went to a pop music quiz Friday night, where the demographic was definitely skewed. We were the youngest people there, you know, and we're 40. We're not 40s. So it was definitely skewed towards like the 60s and stuff like that. But so there was a 90s round, which we obviously absolutely killed on. It just sort of occurred to me, actually. It's like, oh, man, I am doing the I've got old thing, because I couldn't really tell you anything about modern, like, today's pop music, like, or anything like that. If I hear, like, a female singer now, I'm one of those people where it's just like, I don't know that I can tell you who that is. I can't tell them apart anymore.
I only know stuff that I think is good, but it's like, how did I arrive at that? And I think it's because I'm not exposed to everything. Like, it used to be one was exposed to everything on the radio.
Kind of, yeah.
And that isn't the case anymore. I think that is a shift, right? But like, so for example, I know because I like, you know, Chappell Roan and Olivia Rodrigo and whatever, Billie Eilish and Charlie XCX, all that stuff. I like all that stuff, so I listen to it because I find
you seek
it and listen
it,
to it. Yeah, but majority of stuff, like Sabrina Carpenter, is like the biggest thing in the world, I think, and I barely listen to a single song.
I only know Espresso. That's like one, but I know she's big, right? It's like Rodrigo, I couldn't name a song of. Chaperone, no idea. Ty the Creator or something came up recently. It's like, yeah, he's big, but couldn't tell you anything that he's done.
He's very talented, but I never like connected to his music, so that's a me thing with Tyler the Creator, in that he has been around a while, you know. So he would have been around when I was more into hip hop, like Danny Brown and ASAP Rocky and that kind of thing. I just never connected at the time to Tyler the Creator, but he's gone on to make, you know, tons more stuff. And it's quite
He must have just not been big enough, right, to break through those other huge names at that point in time. And now he's come out of it. I don't know. And it's also like, I got into an interesting conversation with the guy running the pop quiz as well. It's like, it's funny because he was like, some of the rounds he was like, yeah, I wrote that 90s round like 20 years ago. And it's right. And it's like, it's really some of the questions in there, like, yeah, they were. They would be definitely considered hard now, because it's like those songs just didn't stay,
right?
They were big at the time, but they didn't. You just don't think of them now. Like, there was one song by The Cause in particular that came up actually like two or three times in various guises. And he's like, this song was huge at the time, and I'm like, I cannot remember this at all, like.
It's the same discoverability problem. Like, that's why we don't know any modern stuff, is that, like, as Dan said, we're not exposed to the radio, but that applies to, like, everything. Like, we're like the same for video games. Like, we all play specific types of video games that we like now. We don't really have, like, demo discs or whatever, where you just play whatever the fuck's on there and find out a thing that you want.
Yeah. No, it's true.
Unless you're Rob playing Game Pass, I guess,
yeah.
That's about as close as it gets.
But even that's then curated, right? The internet and the digital age just mean that there is probably 10 times more stuff, maybe more than that, in a given day, right, being released. And it's like,
I think I'm unusual because I don't even browse Netflix. You know what I mean? I actually choose things that I want to watch or whatever. You know what I mean? Whereas a lot of people just like, I'd be like, oh, you know, they're scrolling through them.
And then just go for whatever's...
I kind of do that with anime, like Netflix's anime suggestions. It would just be like, I'll sort of have a little look through that list and be like, oh, that looks interesting. Let's give that a go. It's like, that's kind of the only thing I do that with. Oh, and that's a lie. Now, Gnome and I started watching Department Q on Netflix.
what's that?
It's a crime, Scottish crime drama with a lot of swearing. So it's slightly difficult for us to watch because it's, I don't know, we just fancied some crime drama. And it's like, and this one was pretty highly rated. And I think Noam had heard of it outside of Netflix, you know, like it had come up somewhere else. So it's supposed to be good, but it is good. But yeah, it's a bit dark and a bit, so we can't really watch it unless Marzi's asleep. It's one of those.
No.
But it is good. It's a slow burn, though, which, you know, can be annoying.
So yeah, Fantastic Four. it definitely felt like they wanted it to be shorter, like, and not be an epically long thing, right? So you can tell that they cut stuff, quite a lot of stuff, for time.
Oh.
Like Natasha Lyonne is a character in it that's like, I think, like a friend slash love interest for the Thing, but you kind of meet her a couple of times on the street and then that's it. I don't really know what she was doing in the film. So yeah, I think they wanted it to be breezy. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But yeah, they succeeded in making it breezy. I was actually quite liked the music, which is very unusual for it. Actually had like a theme, which is vaguely memorable, which never happens with Marvel superheroes. Like, you never get like a Superman level theme, do you? And can you think? I mean, but people know the Avengers theme
Yeah, the Avengers one is kind of catchy.
So I was impressed they managed to cut. I mean, it's not the best, but I was impressed they managed to have a sort of uplifting superhero-y theme.
I've got another theme in my head, but I don't know which one it's from. It's sort of like the da 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 da. Oh no, wait, that's the Game Awards. Fuck.
Again.
That's not even Marvel.
Podcast right.
Yeah.
And this one does what I always think is dumb, but a great thing about the Superman theme is that even though it's not saying it, it's clearly going Superman, isn't it?
Right.
When it goes da da da, it's clearly Superman, right? Da, da, da. And this is like Fantastic Four, which is good. So yeah, and you know, good casting and all that stuff. So yeah, watchable for sure. But they seem to be speed running the Galactus storyline, which I guess is the most distinctive thing for the Fantastic Four. They skip the whole origin story completely, I guess, because they just have a like talk show host briefly explain the origin story and then go straight into it.
That's a shame, because I like an origin story when it's done well. That kind of is my bag. So I'm a bit
doing them.
I know, but
over and over.
The problem is like I guess you're right. I guess what is this, the fourth or fifth time someone has attempted a Fantastic Four,
yes,
franchise from the start.
And it is the first MCU.
It's the first MCU one. Attempt. Yeah, it's not Fantastic. It's not Fan-4-stick. It's not whatever the last one was. Yeah, and which were all of. I mean, that first one was okay, the first Fox attempt, but yeah, I don't know. I think the thing is, it's like an origin story often, I think it like makes the film better structured in the way that like by having to dedicate act one to the origin story, right? The remainder of the plot by necessity is limited in scope. You know, just because of length of running time of film left.
Yeah.
So it actually ends up being a sort of more breezy, popcorny.
So I suppose they did that with this one by just limiting the runtime.
Yeah.
In order to do that.
Because I think it's very much a, I don't know, I think it's a recurring theme with me in Marvel films of late, where it's just like, right, this seems like this would be a suitable last fight. And then you realize, no, this is the end of act two. We're going to have another like build up to another thing. Yeah. And you're like, whew, okay, this is getting a bit lengthy.
Yeah.
I think probably should have planned my bathroom breaks a bit better.
Exactly.
Yeah. They do need to come cut back a bit. I think I know they want people to like get their money's worth from going to the cinema to a degree because cinema prices are pretty high. And it's becoming harder and harder to justify to take the family out, I guess, to see a film. But it's, but then like if you're taking the family out to see a film, kids aren't going to sit through like a 2.5 hour Epic.
There's a speech in the middle of this one where one of the characters says it's about family, basically, and then they lampshade it by being, oh, God.
Lol.
Because, of course, it's about family. It's the Fantastic Four. It's the well, two superhero of them family, that make a family. Yeah, two of them are literal family, and two of them are married, right? And,
it'd be funny if there was like a picture of Groot in the background or the sign there. So it's like, gotta get Vin Diesel in there somewhere.
they should have just had.
They're like, in the wrong universe.
Yeah, they should have just had that universe's version of Fast and Furious playing on TV or something. Just make up a fake Fast and Furious.
Yeah, it's just in the background. Like.
So it does seem to be a universe where there aren't any other superheroes that I could tell.
Well,
it's I'm just sure the Fantastic Four.
There's going to be some.
Spurious speed.
Well,
there you go.
Well, I don't know because the teaser at the end is for they're setting up the next Avengers film very quickly, which is Doctor Doom, right? With Robert Downey Jr. as Doctor Doom. But whether he's from Prime Earth or whatever it's called or what, I have no idea.
No, there's no way he would have to be cut. This has been my theory for a while. Like he has. Like yes, they could do it as just him, and like if they never show behind the mask. Right, if they just get him to do the acting, but they never show you Robert Downey Jr.'s face, that would be fine. Like they could do that from any universe they wanted, but no, if they're going to show him as Doctor Doom,
right? So that's how they do
they
it.
They have to come from
he comes from another
somewhere
universe.
Else. Yeah.
Okay. Weird. I mean, it's all weird. Anyway,
I mean, maybe. Like, I don't know. I actually don't know a lot about Doctor Doom's backstory. Like, where, like who he is.
Just
that
he's
to
the
be,
ruler
right?
of a whole country, isn't he?
I have I no think. Idea.
Yeah. Well, a lot of. Various superheroes have been in comic books and rulers of random countries.
Oh, sure. Black Panther, right? Sort of.
Yeah, Black Panther. Although that's kind of a hidden country, yeah.
Quite a few of them as well.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I think in the comics that the country that Doom rules is the one that gets... You know, that Ultron destroys or whatever that they
what, Sokovia?
Did. Yeah, but it's not called Sokovia. They invented that, I think, for the film, whatever. It's actually his country in the comic. I don't know.
Doomland.
Yeah, Doomville.
It would be funny if he turns up and he's like, I am the Doomslayer.
It's Doomland, he has to... Have everything painted black and green. Obviously.
Oh man, no, that was evil. Land.
Yeah, that was evil.
Yeah, it's a reference to us playing Roller Coaster Tycoon, where evil was obviously just dark, the darkest black and the limest green.
The most Xbox. The most.
I suppose so. Yeah. Pre-Xbox evil.
We knew what was up before Microsoft came up with the idea.
Well, that's our Disney section. Star Wars and Marvel covered.
Bring you the YouTube advert section briefly.
Yay.
Guns.
No, not this time. Well, there's two things. Firstly, the maybe last holdout of shitty mobile video games not using the exact same advert has fallen. they are now the one that had always not been doing it is now doing the run through numbered gates thing.
Oh no.
Which is obviously fake. Because I already know what that game is because I've seen so many fucking adverts for it, and I've seen the ones where they accidentally show the real thing, even in the previous version where it's like, this is fake, but here's the actual one bit of real footage.
Huh.
So it's like, they were already making fake adverts, but now they're making the same fake advert as everyone else.
Oh, interesting.
They've finally given up, I guess. They were like, oh, fucking...
We'll put this minigame somewhere in our game as a really crap version of it and like just pay someone to do a CG trailer.
These goddamn statistics show that this is the one that works, and we've been holding out not doing it, but I guess we fucking have to do it. And then the other thing that's...
Those like... Run through gate CG trailers always strike me as like really weird because they're like, in order to make them look how they look, they've basically made
the whole
game.
Thing, yeah.
And yet the actual version that you can potentially play as a crappy mini game inside the shitty idle town builder game as they normally are, right? Like, it's so much worse. It's like someone's built that. Someone's built a potentially good version of this.
Maybe they don't have. Maybe it's not even like a game. Maybe it's like a sort of animation UI where you just like put in the JPEGs of your specific game into the thing and it automatically generates it.
At this point, that wouldn't surprise me. There's probably an animation house that's just like, yeah, we've got shit game trailer 2.0 ready to go.
And then the other thing that's been turning up in my YouTube adverts again for some reason is another round of shit Chinese products.
Yay.
Although the thing that I've been having fun with those adverts recently is like, how fast can you spot that it is in fact Chinese? Like, how long does it take until it's just like the stock footage is clearly a Chinese person or has Chinese text in it? And you're like, yep, that's the Chinese shit products.
I had a Temu ad the other day that actually looked genuinely interesting, but like, I know for a fact that if you actually bought the thing, it would be nothing like what they showed.
Sure.
It was like a third party like game controller, but it had a screen in it for like configuring how it, you know, button mappings and stuff like that on the fly, or changing the LEDs, which were like all over this thing. It like had light pipes down the sides of it and things like that. It was bonkers, but it actually looked quite fancy. But you know what the price of it supposedly was according to this Temu ad? Use the code and get it for £3.69. And I'm like, huh, that can't possibly be real.
No. Yeah, some of these, I think the worst one of these Chinese tat adverts that I've seen was one where like the English subtitles were in a space where it was like everything behind it was slightly blurry, where it's like you can see the outline of where the Chinese text was probably they photoshopped out of this video file.
Okay, yeah.
And it's always 50 to 70% off, obviously.
Never less.
No, never less than 50%.
It's the DFS sale. Sale never ends.
I heard they're having a sale.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, I saw it on TV.
Oh, right in a second.
Yeah.
Does it end tomorrow?
Yeah.
At which point another sale begins. That must be how they get away with it, right? They must be like different, by just categorizing it as different sales. Well, yeah, because you're not supposed to like if a couch's price, for instance, is never the high value, you can't say this is the cheaper price. Well, yeah, but
that's only from the start. It's like if it's been that price for any period of time, you can probably put it on sale forever.
Then you can absolutely do that. Yeah,
but how long do they keep it at full price?
Like a day.
Yeah, like a day.
Put it right at the back of the store where no one will see it. Yeah, it's like, at that price. And then
this is the exclusive preview couch. Well,
that would be the better way to deal with it, is make people think it's important to get it at the full price.
This is next year's hot style. What day is it today? December 31st. Oh, yeah. Must be hard working in a couch shop.
I mean, a lot of places to relax, though. If you need
to. Yeah, but like hard to actually be motivated to do work. Yeah. You know, just be like, look at all these cushions, dog. Look at this cushion, man.
Well, that's why you have to make it so that as part of your sale fits, you encourage people to come and sit down with you.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Test it out, and I'm going to sit here coincidentally.
I'm
going to
sit here next to you
on a level.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm not sitting down for any other particular reason.
Stare you down while I give you a 4-hour spiel on this particular weave of fabric.
Probably a bit more difficult to do if it's a bed shop.
Let me lie down.
Come and lie down with me on this bed so we can see what it's like.
Yeah, that's not creepy at all.
Do they still do that thing with the DFS adverts or whatever, where the people in the adverts are really tiny people, right, to make that?
Oh, so well, they deliberately choose short models. Wow. Yeah.
They've done that forever.
Yeah, that would make sense. I can see that. There definitely used to be one lady who was on a lot of ads for the same same couch company of some sort. I don't know if it was DFS or one of the others. I can't actually think of any others right now. Like,
yeah.
But she was definitely not tall.
No.
not a large lady. But it's like the small burger thing, isn't it?
Yes.
It's like make a smaller version of the burger so it looks like it's plumper.
Hmm.
Full of meat. And you actually don't want that one. It's a small burger.
Yeah, it's got. I mean, the one for the photographs have got all kinds of weird stuff in it to make it look like that.
Have you seen those McDonald's breakfast ads where it's just like a slow panning, extreme close up of like an Egg McMuffin?
Like, that would make me physically sick, I think.
it's just the sort of transition between the egg layer and the hash brown, and it's just really zoomed in and slowly panning, and the whole idea of the ad is like, you know what this is, you want it. I can get behind that. That's pretty cool. I did actually try and get an Egg McMuffin the other day, but
it was too late.
What is the time of day when it flips over?
Apparently 11 a.m. Okay, because I was coming out of Asda at pretty much that time. I got back to my car and thought, oh, I could just burn some McDonald's points on my breakfast. So I fired up the app, got my order in at 10:58.
Nice.
Drove over to the drive-thru and it's like, cool, we're processing your order. The app hangs at this point.
Oh, nice. But doesn't happen every day.
What? Yeah, it happens a lot. Like, these takeout apps are terrible. Like, they're great when they work, like, but the percentage chance of it not working is pretty high. But luckily I had seen what the code would be on the previous screen and remembered it. So I said it to them and it's like, yeah, well, I know my order number. I was like, the app's hung, but I know my number. It's like, yeah, fine, we can find it. And it's like, yeah, it's this. And they're like, oh yeah, that happens. It's like, yeah, you've just missed like the window for breakfast. And it's like, well, can I still have my breakfast? You can see I've ordered it. And they're like,
no.
Nah. All right, can I order something else? And there's a big sign up saying we can't take card payments right now. And it's like, well, screw you then.
I'll just drive
through the drive-thru and just be like, hi. I just want to say hello.
You didn't even have car money. Not even like a couple of quid.
No. No, I was carrying nothing. It was just keys and phone.
It's all we should need now, though.
Yeah.
Well, sure. You never know when you might... Except you do exactly
when you might order McDonald's breakfast.
You might need some coins. 10:58.
Well, the whole point is that I was going to use the app to burn some points on a sausage McMuffin. But
did it not burn your points because the order didn't succeed?
No, that is the one really good thing about the McDonald's app. Like, unless it is confirmed at the on site, it's like it doesn't just burn your points or charge you or anything. It's like it does everything properly there. So I'll give them credit for that. But at least it functions, like, most of the time. Like, the McDonald's one is actually probably the best of the lot. It's still crap, like, in terms of reliability, but it is the best of the takeaway apps.
Why? Which ones do you use? Have you got
KFC has never really worked for me. It doesn't accept payment. Which is a bit of a problem.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's never worked for me. The Burger King one is okay, but ridiculously slow. So like putting your order in isn't so bad, but by the time you get to the checkout, like it can sometimes go like break your order horribly, and it's like, well, you can't actually buy this, and it's like, okay, why? Dunno. So you just empty your basket and start it again. Or and then you get the bit where you're like, you've got everything finally sorted and it's in your basket and it's like, right, I want to pay, and it's like the button just has one of those like dot dot dots on it for like a friggin' age before it actually lets you sort it out, and it's like, ah, come on. So that's a problem. The Popeyes one was okay when I did that. That was all right.
They seem to be expanding. Like, there's one by you now.
There is.
It used to be quite rare.
The Taco Bell one is unusable, frankly. It's a disaster zone. It's about it for local takeaway apps that actually function near me. Domino's is fine. That one works. Actually, I take it back what I said about McDonald's. The Domino's one is the best one. That just works.
Well, that's got the actual pizza tracker thing that actually works because they've instituted it, right? In the the staff are like pressing giant buttons, I think.
Because they already had a website for ordering pizza from, unlike McDonald's and all the rest of them who have never had that before, really.
Yeah, they've gone app first rather than having a web interface to do it. Whereas, I guess Domino's were pros at this point.
I just don't have any individual apps for any of these places. Like, I only have, delivery food app that aggregates multiple different places.
Yeah, I don't want those extra surcharges, though. The hidden charges that kind of stuff. Don't want that if I can avoid it.
Yeah.
Also, I get, like, burger points on the Burger King and McDonald's apps. So,
what do points mean? Burgers.
Burgers.
Usually. Probably not, though.
We'll never again see the likes of the Monopoly chaining.
it wasn't the Monopoly game, was it? It was pre that. I think I just called it the Big Mac giveaway was the one that was really good for us, where we were just like, you've won a Big Mac. Oh, I better eat this Big Mac. You've won a Big Mac. Oh, I better eat that Big Mac.
Yeah. How did that even happen? Like, it's so weird.
We just got very lucky, I guess, with the probability of the stickers on the box.
Because you got a sticker with the Big Mac and with the fries, I seem to remember. Or was it?
Yeah, something like that. It's still a bit like that, I think. But, they've changed it now, so I think it's like the burgers don't have them in the Monopoly game, and it's like it's on the drinks and the fries. You get more of them if you order a large meal, right? That's the... I think that's the system it works by now. So I suppose you could just order a boatload of fries and not eat anything else and get more tokens if you're into your Monopoly game. I don't remember that happening this year, actually.
Oh.
I eat too much takeaway, apparently.
Apparently.
Do you do the news? It's a podcast.
The news.
It's a podcast about video games.
Yeah, not necessarily about fast food apps.
I mentioned it once.
It's definitely a segment. We mentioned it a few times, but now we're talking about it in earnest.
Hey, how do you fancy not one, but two Nintendo Directs?
Except not really.
Except
not really.
We got a partner showcase and an Indie World event.
Or in other words, two partner showcases, they might as well be.
Pretty much, yeah. There's like slightly bigger partners and slightly smaller partners, I suppose. Not a lot of particular note to come out of these, I would say. Not for our tastes, anyway. We got an announcement of a brand new Katamari game that's coming to Switch 2 in October 24th. Once Upon a Katamari. So I guess get a little hype for that. I haven't really played, I don't think, any of the Katamari games past... There was one on PSP, I think I tried. I can't remember if that was before or after the Xbox 360 one. I definitely played the 360 one. I don't know. I don't really know if modern Katamari really cuts it, you know?
You would hope it would, because, you know, the whole point of having better hardware would be, you know, to manage more individual objects.
Yeah. Properly scale individual, you know, without having those stage transitions.
Although probably would still do that, though, because it would just be like just a cluster of like tiny little things you can't see, just be all the time of things sticking to the Katamari. But
yeah, it'd be cool if it could nanite it up or whatever.
Maybe. But that was kind of low poly aesthetic is quite important.
That's true.
So yeah, we're getting a new Katamari game. Could be cool. Hang out with the king some more.
Maybe.
When's that due out?
He's still about. October this year.
Nice.
We got a trailer for some more Hyrule Warriors, because that counts as a partner game, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
Which is a bit weird. I remember we saw some fights. It's a little bit of fighting.
Well, the only interesting bits is that, like, it looks like there's now combo attacks. combo supers, I guess.
Yeah.
Where two characters do as a super attack at the same time. Which is like, does that mean that you just have to be close to one of the other characters on the battlefield? Or does that mean you literally have like, I don't know, like a fighting game swap where you just swap between two characters?
Or are they like an assist? Like, can you assign characters as an assist?
Yeah, have a character that only appears for that move and that's all.
Yeah.
That could be.
Or maybe there's more to it than that. Like, maybe the assists are more like flexible for building weird combos or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's kind of a hint at something cool, anyway.
Potentially cool.
Potentially cool, yeah.
And then a little teaser at the end, which kind of reveals how they're going to put Link in this game, I guess.
Yeah, that's your theory, isn't it? Yeah. Because
they show a Minoru-type mech thing being assembled, except it's lying down and looks a bit more human-shaped in a way that Link might be lying down in the Shrine of Resurrection, you know? It does look very much like that's how they're going to do that. Not the way I thought they were going to do it. I always thought they were going to shoehorn... Well, I didn't necessarily think they were going to shoehorn Link explicitly in. I thought they were going to make another character who uses Link's exact moveset for a specific reason that's still a spoiler for you guys in Tears of the Kingdom.
Okay, fine. I still think like that game has a slight style problem compared to Age of Calamity, right? Like, because everything is in the old Zone Eye look.
Sure.
Right? It's, I mean, there isn't a huge visual variety on show so far.
Well, I don't think that's going to matter super much because it's just going to probably be mostly the same fucking map of Hyrule again.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, that would be cool, like, however much work that... Because, I mean, they did do quite a bit of work for Age of Calamity, like, around the Great Plateau, especially, where it's like, here's the actual, what it used to look like on the Great Plateau, that kind of thing. So presumably they're going to do that again for, like, the Temple of Time and everything. The old Temple of Time, not the...
I feel like some of the geometry in Age of Calamity was... Well, not just like simplified because of like technical reasons, but like I feel there's a sort of compressed feeling to Age of Calamity. So I don't know if they did just straight up take the geometry and it feels like it's been shrunk like intentionally.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously it's kind of laid out differently and generally smaller, but it's definitely just the exact same areas. They just like give us the textures and models that you use, and then we'll just jiggle them around a bit.
Yeah. Apparently, like that, this kind of amazed me actually when I heard this. It's like, apparently like Age of Calamity doesn't run on the Breath of the Wild engine.
Well, no,
it's using Koei Tecmo's own engine, but like they've managed to capture the look pretty goddamn well.
I mean, that's what I'm saying, right? Like, you just gave them the models and textures and...
It's more than that, though, isn't it? It's like, it's the colour saturation. It's how that cell-shading style works. It's there's an awful lot to it. And it's like, so it's kind of amazing they actually managed to pull that off.
At least this time they won't have to do that work because it's the same.
Sure, yeah.
Maybe that would give them an opportunity to...
It just
optimize
has,
it and make it run there.
Just has to be a more stable 30. And I think this trailer looked like, because even Digital Foundry, they pointed out, like, with the trailer of the last Imprisoning War trailer we got, like, that it looked a little unstable in places. Which they, in fairness, they could carry out it. Sometimes it's a downsampling problem, right? Like, how it's ended up being spliced into the showcase video. Right, that can be a problem.
Yeah,
but to my eye, this new trailer looked a lot more stable. So perhaps maybe there is hope that the optimization is going to be a bit more solid this time round.
You can blast through it with some Switch 2 power as well, I guess.
Well, maybe. Like,
well, it's going to be a Switch 2 game this time, but yeah,
they might try and push the Switch 2 too far.
Yeah. As is the Dynasty Warriors way. Just always go that little bit harder than perhaps you should. It's the same thing like with the Earth Defense Force games, right? It's like, just go a bit further than the console is really capable of. I don't know. I'm a little bit excited.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit excited.
The one non-Nintendo game we were excited about for the Switch 2.
Yeah, I mean, God knows how many... Oh, man, we sunk so many hours into the last one.
Yeah.
Alrighty. not really exciting for me because I've already played these games, but hey, if you haven't jumped on that Yakuza tip yet, there's Kiwami 1 and 2 are coming to Switch.
All right, okay. Would that be a good way to play? I get it. Why not?
It'd be a fine way to play. I mean, I might argue you might want to do that on PC. If you want the best possible experience, but I can't see this would be a bad way to play them. Especially seeing as like Kiwami 1 and 2 were kind of in that weird transition between like their old engine and the Dragon engine. So I think on consoles, Kiwami 1 used to run at 60 FPS. Mm. And then Kiwami 2 comes out and it's running on Dragon engine and it runs at 30 FPS. So there's... I don't know how that trend... A lot of the footage actually looked like it was running at 30 on Switch 2. So if you're used to the console experience, it's probably fine. That was the original intended experience, I guess, for Kiwami 2. But if that's a problem for you, PC's the way to go. That's where it's the best, obviously.
And that'll get you your 60.
That'll get you whatever frame rate you want.
Yeah, sure. It's not like it's a game full of ray tracing features.
No, it's not. But they are very, they're probably the best two in the series, in my opinion. So... I know some people really love Zero, but Zero's up there. Zero's very good. But for me, Kiwami 1 and 2, mwah, chef's kiss.
Mm. And they make sense story-wise to start there as well.
They do, yeah. And they do flow into each other quite well.
Okay. That's the one to go for.
Yeah, that's cool. And the only other thing I've got is like Square Enix... announced a couple more HD 2D games, one of which is a prequel to Octopath Traveler. So we're getting Octopath Traveler Zero, talking about zeros. There's been a lot of talk this year about, like, hey the Clair Obscur has brought back the turn-based RPG, and then they list off every game that Square Enix has been quietly doing on the side. And it's like, these are all good. They're just not quite as big as flashy as Expedition 33. So they're doing a sort of a classic turn-based RPG in Octopath Traveler again, but the other thing they're doing is a more of a Zelda-like, but with the somewhat unappealing title The Adventures of Elliot. The Millennium Tales, as a subtitle as well. It's like, it's the first game, they put a goddamn subtitle on it.
I mean, they're obviously trying to riff off Zelda, like...
Yeah, The Legend of Zelda, The Adventures of Elliot. I see it. The trailer editing was also kind of really shonky. Like, there's a bit where it's like, and you're joined by your fey friend... I forget her name. Let's call her Phalange. And you're joined by your fairy friend, Phalange. And then it cuts to a scene that immediately tells you, hi, I'm Phalange. I'm a fairy. And it's like, why did you do that? Like,
I mean, that's just standard
Nintendo crappy
RPG, like, anime writing.
I think that trailer was like one of those like descriptive trailers that Nintendo put together, and it's just like, what a crappy editing choice. I mean, come on. So there's a demo for that out, The Adventures of Elliot, and they're doing the same thing they've done with some of their recent RPG titles, which is like, hey, we're actually going to be listening to player feedback, and it's almost like they use their demos as a form of early access with this stuff, which is kind of cool. So that's the partner showcase. In the indie world showcase, again, not a lot I'm gonna pick out here. Neverway looked vaguely interesting to me. It's another Zelda, it's a top-down Zelda like, I guess, is a way to describe it, but it's kind of note because it's got a pretty dark tone, but features the pixel artist from Celeste doing the visual work, and a soundtrack by Disaster Piece. So I'm kind of like, ooh, I like that guy.
What's he done before?
Fez. Right, Most importantly, Fez, but he also did Hyper Light Drifter. So that's kind of cool. That might be one to watch. The sequel to probably one of my favorite party games of recent years, Ultimate Chicken Horse, is getting a sequel called Ultimate Sheep Raccoon, which I think we'd seen before in various forms. But
in the actual Nintendo Direct, they showed it very briefly, but they'd already revealed it before that as well, I think.
So it's now about like riding little motorbikes for a stage rather than platforming.
More like BMXs, right?
Yeah.
It is basically, you know, like Trials.
Kind of, yeah. I'm a bit worried that actually limits this, like, more than Ultimate Chicken Horse. Like, I'm a little bit worried that mechanic is actually more limiting.
I mean, it depends what the, like, movement options are like, I suppose.
I always just wanted more gubbins in Ultimate Chicken Horse. Well, like, Chicken Horse is great, but, like, it just, like, as with any game of a brilliant design that... benefits from random, it just needed more.
You think the obvious answer for a game like that would just be workshop support?
Sure, yeah. I mean, maybe they'll do that this time around.
Yeah, maybe.
What, so people can make their own
make their
own pieces.
Yeah.
It just has to have, like, a collision box and then, like, some kind of other attributes, like movement or whatever, and you could make practically anything.
Yeah, or enough modability to, because there's the black holes, right, in Chicken Horse, which are like the gravity mods and things like that, yes. There could be some wild stuff that could be done. It was a damn fun video game. And anything else of note that I've picked out is UFO 50 is coming to Switch. It's like, that's not a big surprise, I suppose, but like UFO 50 is supposed to be real good. Mm. It's kind of on my to-do list. But it's got so many like apparently actually good games in it that it could be a bit of a time sink. I imagine not all 50 are good.
A surprise... probably a higher portion than those old like actual NES 1 in 50 carts or whatever. Right, where one of them was a game and the rest garbage.
Well, yeah. If that, man. Yeah, no, this is actually a high percentage of gold in this thing. But I'm not done with Nintendo news.
Are you?
No, because sucks to be an American right now.
For several reasons. For reasons.
But yeah, if for some reason you want to buy a Switch 1, price is going up. I don't know why Nintendo would do this, particularly. Like, I guess they're just always all about the profits. This sort of implies they're still making Switch 1s.
Yeah, I guess.
Or they have enough stock that they don't want to just fire sale them.
I wouldn't be surprised if they continue to make them. The PS2 was made for quite a long way into the PS3.
Oh, yeah, loads.
And, you know, game share is a thing now that they've been slightly trying to push, I suppose. I guess. Does give you give your child the slightly cheaper, shittier Switch 1 and then just game share games to it.
I mean, I did do that today as I, like, was removing the dock from my TV. Milesy obviously took an interest in what I was up to and he was like, cars? And I'm like, okay, what have I got on here that you could actually play? And I'm like, I don't actually have Mario Kart on my Switch. So it's... like, what do I do? Oh, Virtua Racing. You can never go at that. just crash into some walls for a while. So maybe eventually the Switch 1 will be Milesy's console. Seems plausible.
Yeah, maybe.
But yeah, so it's going up to... The thing about the pricing is that the SWOLED is going up to $400, which is... like almost disastrously close to the Switch 2 price, right? That's $450. And it's like, just why would you? Why would you do that? If you're after like a Switch Lite or a regular Switch 1, which are still about, apparently, like those prices are a bit still fairly reasonable. They're going up by roughly 15%, but like it's, you know, and they're a lot cheaper than a Switch 2. So maybe there's an argument there for a Switch Lite for your kids still, but.
Yeah, it does seem odd, because why wouldn't you just get the Switch 2 if you're going for the OLED one?
Exactly. Well, it's
weird.
I mean, the Switch 2 screen has its limitations, but yeah, the price is so close that it's just like, yeah, why would you do that?
Maybe they just won't. This just means that Switch OLEDs will be sold, not in America, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, perhaps.
Whatever stock they still have, if they're not currently making them, they'll just not sell as many of that in America.
Well, yeah, I doubt if they have stock somewhere, they won't be shipping them to America now, probably.
Maybe.
Probably. In other news...
I watched... Well, I didn't really fully watch, but I saw some of the Pokemon thing. They did a Pokemon Direct or whatever the fuck they call them, I forget. Pokemon Presents, that's what it's called.
Yeah.
Because like, I saw a bit of the stuff about ZA coming up. And it's like, it's annoying because it's like, oh shit, this might be the one that gets me again. Especially now that it's on the Switch 2 and it runs, you know, good-ish.
Did you play Arceus?
No.
I mean, that seems like the better one. Like, well, even just looking at ZA, there's a bit of me that thinks Arceus might be the better one.
It's hard to tell because, like, you don't even know how ZA is even going to function, apart from it having the capture mechanics of Arceus. It's not like... It's very hard to tell because, I mean, everyone keeps saying it's like, oh, it's just this one city that feels tiny. And it's like, well, it could be, but there's ways you could make that big.
It's probably still biomes. It's like not all the buildings are going to look the same.
Well, yeah.
Although there's going to be a lot of buildings that look the same.
But then, like, you know, the buildings aren't just the set dressing. It's you're going to be in the streets and they're probably not even going to go inside very many buildings either.
Mm.
There might be a, you know, secret... Not Team Rocket Lab.
Right, yeah.
Whatever bad guy team they come up with.
Yeah, and it's not like the Switch 2 version of this is getting significant upgrades, right? Well, it's getting frame rate and resolution upgrades. But
it does look pretty good when it's running like that. I'm like, oh yeah, this is how it always should have looked. This is how all the last two or three Pokemon games should have looked.
Right, do you feel like that's the problem, though? Like, it makes it feel like what the Switch 1 could have done had it been written right.
I mean, apart from the resolution. The resolution definitely actually does help. I'm like, oh yeah, this does look nicer with a better resolution.
I guess you're right. There's something about the... I guess it's how Mario, like, works, right? Is that in why that... It just looks nice, sharp.
Yeah.
Right? Even though there's not a lot of texture detail going on or anything like that. Like, it's not like Pokemon have textures particularly.
No.
It's just those crisp lines.
Yeah. But, you know... completely undistinguishable at this point, where, like, how big it is, or, like, you know, how many Pokemon there are, like, how many are there to capture, and how much does it still keep the Arceus thing of, like, your actual goal is to capture, like, 10 of everything or whatever. So there's not as many of them, but your goal is to capture more of each one.
Right, in a sort of Pokemon Go style.
I expect they'll still keep that, but then there's, like, how do you make that more or less fun, like, I suppose. So we'll see. Maybe that will be the Pokemon game that I'll end up getting again, but there's other games towards the end of this year that we need to play on the Switch 2 anyway. So maybe that one will just get left by the wayside. Maybe I'll be playing other Switch 2 games at that point.
Metroid Prime!
Yeah, hopefully.
Come on, baby.
Yeah.
I mean, that still might not come out.
Yeah.
We still don't actually know.
Yeah. It looked pretty likely. I don't know.
Yeah, I would still say it's fairly likely, but we're getting on a bit in the year for it not to have a release date. Alrighty. That is the Nintendo way, isn't it? They tend not to announce that stuff until fairly close.
Yeah,
that's true.
They'll do a special direct for it where they'll tell you far too much about the entire game.
What about Splatoon Raiders, yo?
Yeah, yes.
Oh, I've been quite tempted, actually, to step back into Splatoon 3 just to see what the... You know, because they did patch that to make it look sharper,
right?
And stuff like that. Tempted to go and have a little look at some point. Yeah. In other news, Sony are suing Tencent... for Light of Motiram, which we talked about a little while ago. If you've not seen this, it looks exactly like Horizon. Like, exactly. It's like same sort of overgrown post-apocalyptic landscape with animals as robots and the protagonist being culturally appropriated. I don't know. You know, the sort of tribal style. to it. The gameplay itself doesn't, you know, if you've seen that footage of it, doesn't look nearly as polished as Horizon or anything like that. It's a little bit different. Seems to be going for a slightly different vibe in that way, but everything about the theming and the aesthetic of this, in Sony's words, is a slavish clone of Horizon. So here comes a lawsuit, and it's so I think this one is a little more obvious than the Power World one, but it's like it's always in, I guess these things are always in the details, right? How much can you be inspired by something and not be something?
How much is a Doom clone a Doom clone?
Yeah.
When does that become a different thing?
When is the line crossed legally? I would say these guys are pretty close to the wire. Like, it feels very close. Probably more so than Power World.
Yeah. All they needed to do was, I guess, not give the animals guns. That would be the opposite of Horizon.
Or make them not animals?
Yeah, but then what are they going to be?
I don't know.
Just robots.
Pokemon.
Make them not look at make them robotic Pokemon. That will solve the problem. I have competing lawsuits.
Yeah, I have so many copyrights infringed that... so that'll be fun. I can come up in tax legal updates, I'm sure. And the last bit of news I've got is, guess what? Microsoft have cancelled a game.
Really?
And surprise. They have cancelled Contraband. Well, they haven't used the phrase, they haven't outright used the phrase cancel. They've said it's on like some kind of hold as we define our path forward, you know, which seems to be the industry's language for this is fucking cancelled. We haven't actually ever seen this game in action. It was revealed back in 2021 as a kind of next big thing from Avalanche Studios.
Yeah.
You know, the Just Cause guys.
And I figure because at the time that trailer, we said it looked like something else, right?
Well, it wasn't really. It was like a slow motion, like a the world is stopped flyby of this garage. Really, we didn't really get to see anything particularly. It was going to be set in some sort of perhaps like I don't know, a Just Cause-y style tropical island, and they described it as a co-op open world. And stopped there, but everyone thought because it's called Contraband, right, it was going to be like a heist game of some description.
Didn't we say it? I think it might have been at the time, just because these trailers were close together, was like it looked kind of exactly like Redfall, like the inside of the fire station that is your base in Redfall. It didn't. That interior just looked like that kind of interior of a building like that.
Kind of. I would say it definitely had more of a. I'm trying to think of a touchstone. I think it definitely had more of a Far Cry vibe to how it looked than that. Like, it wasn't as dark, obviously. It was in the day.
It didn't really tell you anything.
No.
It was just like, here's a base, probably.
But yeah, it's curious, right? Because I guess, it's also a bit of a shame to see another cancellation, but also, like, I don't think Avalanche Studios are technically associated with Microsoft, right? At least they're not owned by Microsoft, but I don't know what else they've been on for a while, right? What are they secretly working on another Just Cause or something behind the scenes as well as this? Or was this all their eggs in this basket and it's not been going well? I hope you're all right, Avalanche.
Definitely some talented people.
Maybe. It's been a while.
You never know, do you, anymore?
That's the thing. Like, yeah, these projects are so long. It's like, how many people just leave after a project at the studio, right?
Especially more independent studio.
Yeah.
Not owned directly by Microsoft or whatever.
I mean,
EA or whoever.
You and I, Dan, were just talking about like how, like, a couple of weeks ago off air, like how long we spend in our jobs, right? And that, you know, our current roles are probably the longest they've been. Our current roles are probably about as long as a single game's dev cycle these days, right?
Yeah, and it's true.
Like, so Yeah, when you talk about a studio's second game.
GTA 5 came out.
Yeah. Sure, right, yeah. When you talk about a studio's second game, like even from the last one in this era, like it's that entire staff could have shifted easily.
Yeah, that's true.
Mentioning GTA just reminded me, brief reversal back to the YouTube section. Another advert I keep seeing is Rockstar Energy Drinks. And it's just like, right. is this like they're running out of money and they just need to sell the other thing that they sell?
it wasn't an ad, but it was energy drink related. But I saw on Facebook this, I don't know if it was like an art performance or something, but someone had built a rig that held like 100 Monster energy drink cans or like around their head, and it just tips up over them. They're like, ah, and then pretend to go hype. Like,
what? So they all pour onto
they just pour the on his head. On his head. Yep. On his
head. He just opens his mouth opens and quite a lot spills in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It was well, maybe it was 100. Rockstar.
I don't know. Isn't it? That'll be heavy.
But it looked massive. Yeah, I don't know how many cans exactly, but there was a lot of cans in this ring.
A lot of cans. Wow.
That's news.
And that's news. It's time for what you've been playing. Rob, what have you been playing?
I am still elbow deep in Expedition 33.
Are you out of Act 2 yet?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm out of Act 2. And the end of Act 2 is where everything is revealed, pretty much. It's like...
Presumably not everything.
No, there's definitely a couple of things I don't know. And a couple of... And again, through spoilers about the place, I know of a couple of names of... Well, I know one name in particular that I just don't know what that's about. It's not really a spoiler. Say, like, Kotaku and stuff have, like, posted articles that basically say, how to beat Simon. And I'm like, who the bloody hell is Simon? I don't know who this guy is. There's like, an entry in the potential, like, logs I could find, the voice logs, that's just labelled Simon. So he's clear. He's around somewhere. So I'm assuming he's the final boss, I guess, or is a boss, maybe an optional boss, I'm not sure. But I don't know what his deal is. Anyway, yeah, the Act 2 reveal is kind of wild. Like, it's pretty cool, the whole setup of this world and how it works. And it does explain why everyone was how they were and everything that's led up to this. And it's kind of neat, because then, like, when you get into Act 3, you gain an ability that... and I hear Act 3 is quite short, if you actually just follow the main path. But, you get an ability that just basically opens the damn world up. And it's like, every bit of side content you could possibly go and find, yeah, you can now do that. Go nuts.
Okay. Just all in one go.
Pretty much, yeah. and so I'm in the phase of, like, exploring a whole bunch of side stuff at the moment, which range from the... I'm finding this bit. Maybe I missed this on my pass up. This is quite an easy zone. Cool. I'll just do this. Get the gubbins. Get out. To the, oh, hey, this is actually sort of story stuff, but it's side story stuff. Like, it plays into the fact that you can only access this now, and so there's extra bits of lore and bits of background that make sense now. Now that you can get to these places, and those are cool. But there's definitely still a bunch of stuff that you just walk into and be like, oh, nope, I cannot fight this thing. I am dead immediately. Brilliant. I need to be much, much stronger before I even can attempt to take that on. I'm still finding things like that. And there's quite a few of those. There's still the areas that are marked red for danger. And it's like, yeah, okay, those are still pretty difficult. There's a few of those I can do, and I've walked into, and then they've been difficult but doable. But I haven't seen many of them, like I did earlier in the game, turn from the red danger state to the kind of yellowy, this is normal, this is just an area now. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen that happen particularly. Yeah, I don't know. I honestly have no idea how much more of this I've got, because I don't know how much, like, main content there is, but I keep finding side stuff to do and finding side stuff that I can't do because I'm underleveled. It's pretty cool. This game is so good. It's so good. Nitpick time. I wish Act 2 was better paced in terms of the story delivery. Like, there's a lot of, like, the end of Act, I think the lead up to, you know, the lead up through Act 1 is a much more, it feels like a bit more of a linear progression story-wise. And then you get to Act 2 and it's like, okay, yeah, you can do a little bit more side stuff there. But I feel like whenever story stuff happens, all it's really doing is adding to the confusion, particularly. Like, there's not really, it's never explaining itself, and it's just, well, this happened. I don't feel as the protagonists, I guess, I don't feel like I've necessarily progressed until you get to the end of Act 2 and you do this ridiculously epic set of fights. Well, okay, I don't say you've progressed. There are things to do along the way in Act 2, for sure. There are big things to do, but they're just things to do, if you know what I mean. They don't necessarily reveal much about what's going on, and it just all comes towards the end of Act 2. And I feel like that perhaps could have been less of a...
Right.
Less
more of a slow burn reveal.
Yeah, it could have been less of a slog narratively in that regard. Just a few little hint, a few more bits here and there, I think. Like, just something concrete rather than... And I think this comes back to what I said last time a little bit, where it's like, I feel like the characters just don't ask enough questions about each other or about things.
Right.
Like, so everything is weird, and they're just kind of okay with that.
They're just sort of going with the flow.
But if everything's weird, nothing's weird.
Yeah, so I wonder
they don't know what to ask questions about, because everything is equally fine.
Perhaps, yeah. Perhaps that's an element to it. But yeah, I think this thing's rad. Like, I'm constantly surprised by it. Like, I'm let's say I'm regularly surprised by it. I wouldn't say constantly. Yeah. Like, there's, I'm not seeing too many new enemies anymore. But for instance, I'm seeing a lot of the same groupings of stuff, just maybe slightly harder combinations of things. I did find one area which had was just filled with brand new enemies. And it's like, okay, that's cool. Nice. But yeah, I feel like I'm getting to the point where I've perhaps seen most of what this game has to offer. Like, even like when you go to different areas now, it's like they are aesthetically different, but not by much. They're still like cliffs and trees, and you know what I mean, they're not, there isn't so many, like, I feel like the game spoils you right at the start with some wild environment changes, like the not underwater underwater area that is just like, what is happening here? And that's like really early in the game, and it's like, that's probably one of the wildest looking, like, or weirdest environments in the whole thing.
And the biomes become a bit more standard.
Yeah, a little bit. Like, there's one area that's a bit like the Giant's Causeway in Ireland.
Right, the hexagonal rocks.
Yeah, and it's like, while it all looks cool and it's well presented and stuff like that, it becomes there are places that seem less fantastical than others. And then when you start seeing more and more of it, it's like, okay, I'm now in an area that's kind of autumnal, but it's still valleys and trees and grass, right? It's almost a palette swap, but it's not quite a palette swap, if you see what I mean. It's or an area I just stumbled on where the rocks are bright white and the trees are red for some reason. I don't know. It's like, do you know what I mean? There's a little bit of same going on now. Which is a little bit. It's become a little bit disappointing. I thought they could have gone perhaps a touch wilder in spots. I don't know if that's necessarily been a problem in other games. Like, in other, I've been trying to think back to like FF7 and FF8 and games of that era, which obviously didn't have as much horsepower to work with in terms of making areas look or feel different. But I somehow feel like they tackled that problem better. I don't feel like I'm walking into an area in FF7 and thinking, oh, this is exactly like what I did before, just with a new slight reskin on it. But maybe that's almost certainly a limitation of their team size, right, and budget and all that certainly that. I think if they had the opportunity, they would have gone buck wild with this. But it's a damn cool game. I think that's all I've got to say. It's a damn cool game. I honestly have no idea how much more I've got to do with it. oh, and there's like a limit break power that you get at the end of Act Two that suddenly like really opens things up as well. And it's like, oh, okay, I can now.
Limit break is still a kind of mechanic that's used where it's like it builds up when you take damage.
Oh, so it's not, yeah, so it's not a limit break in that sense. It's like it's a limit break in the sense that there's a restriction that is a standard RPG restriction, let's say, that is applied to you, that usually isn't applied to bad guys in these games, that suddenly isn't a problem for you anymore. And it's like, okay. Oh, that's kind of neat. That kind of opens up a whole bunch of possibilities here. Mm. Or it might cause me to revisit strategies that I thought I'd already maxed out, you know, stuff like that. It's a cool game. What else have I been doing? I talked about RC Revenge Pro a little bit last podcast.
Yeah.
I had to know that I wasn't just dunking on this thing because of nostalgia or bad memories or anything like that. So I went back and played a bit more of it. Still felt it sucked. And I'm like, okay, why does this suck? Okay, it's a sequel to Revolt. We really loved Revolt back in the day. Like, is Revolt so bad? And I'm like, well, no, because they started making me question Revolt. Like,
well, yeah,
specifically okay. The console versions of Revolt. Like, did those suck? So I fired up the N64 version of Revolt.
I mean, that one probably did suck.
But not in the ways you might think. Like, it's technically challenged, for sure. Like I don't know, the graphics don't look quite right. Like, the texture quality is terrible. Like, the frame rate isn't brilliant. When you get the bomb power up and explode, for some reason it looks like green cheese. Like, it doesn't look like a big fiery explosion anymore. It's weird.
The N64 version had the weird thing with the aerial, right, where the bomb aerial didn't work correctly.
No, it didn't work.
Yeah.
It didn't work at all. And the N64 version is limited to only 4 cars on track as well, which is kind of a big downgrade from the PC version. But it handles absolutely nothing like RC Revenge does. Like, the physics simulation of how those cars drive is still there, even in the N64 version. And even if you turn down the simulation setting that Revolt had, right? Because as it turns out, all that does is affect how the collision physics works. It doesn't change how the driving physics work. Which I kind of forgot about. Like, there's a sort of, I think it dulls the rotational aspect of collisions, so you don't just spin out all the time when you're hitting things. So you don't really rotate on collisions, which feels a bit weird, honestly. But it means that the actual driving is still feels pretty good. Like, it's hard. Like, the driving in Revolt is actually quite difficult, especially on, I think maybe the PC version was doing some dampening when we were using digital inputs on a keyboard.
Yeah, probably. I mean, it had almost like realisticness where like the wheels take time to rotate, right?
Yeah, but I think if you're using
lock or whatever, they take time to recenter.
But I think if you're using analog, I'm not 100% sure that happens. Like, because it feels so snappy in the sense that when you turn, like, the car just goes whoop and spins out, like if you just jam on it on the analog stick. And then just to prove it to myself even more, I put RVGL on my Steam Deck, which we've done a video of before on the site. RVGL is a community project that brings Revolt back, but using, like, repackages it in a standard OpenGL library so you can run it on modern machines and on Linux, as it turns out. So I've loaded that onto the Steam Deck, and I played that version of it, which runs beautifully in 4K, by the way, on the Steam Deck. And it's the exact same thing. The handling is identical. Like, it's still a bit snappy and a bit funky in, like, analog mode, I think, compared to the old PC digital controls. And I'm wondering if I should just map something to the digital controls to get that old flavor back. Revolt's a good game. Like, it's difficult, and the because you're fighting the physics like that, but that makes it a way more fun experience than RC Revenge. It's such a weird, it just makes me like even more baffled by this thing. Like, why did you do that? Why did you, like, perhaps dumbing it down a little, I can understand an argument for, But dumbing it down to the extent they did is just madness. Like, it's just such a dull thing now. Not even remotely interesting. It's interesting in the context of Revolt. But without Revolt, it's a pile of crap. So I did a bit of that. Played a bit more Balatro. Yeah. I finally
we accidentally re-addicted you to Balatro.
Well, I did one of the challenges.
Okay.
I thought I'd never actually did one before, like, because I looked at the omelet one and thought, well, that's a bit weird. Maybe I'll come back to that. And I just sort of thought, no, I'll skip that. I'll go to the next one. And the next one's actually quite standard.
Yeah, some of them aren't actually that difficult.
No, it's like all it does is force you into the playing straights. Basically, it gives you a deck that doesn't have any threes or twos. And I think it has some more face cards in there, but it gives you the bus. So it's like you don't want to play those face cards, but it gives you the bus and shortcut.
Yeah. It's basically, so you're playing shortened straights, but never using the face cards. And so the tactic generally with the deck is to just try and get rid of the face cards. Ideally, if you get super lucky, you get the legendary Joker that lets you sacrifice face cards for multiplier and then destroy them that way.
That would be rad. No, I did not get that, but yeah, it ended up being a pretty easy run.
Yeah.
So I did that. That was fun. Played a little more New Star GP. Just a hint. I only had a little bit of time. So I fired up and did that. That's still fun. That's still a good game. I think that's pretty much it. I don't think I touched Mario Kart in the last 2 weeks. Like,
we're all done with that now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just sort of waiting on, there's got to be some updates. There has to be some updates coming, but it will happen at Nintendo pace, I guess.
They haven't even done a Donkey Kong Pauline costume update yet. What are they doing?
Obvious tie-in is obvious. Yeah. I mean, I've golded everything I have access to, but for some reason I still don't have access to mirror mode, so I don't really know what I'm missing now.
Well, as I said, have you redone the final cup since you golded everything, basically?
Yeah, I can't really remember. I might have done, but I can't remember.
Theoretically, you should have done that one last if you were working through them in
the... If I was working through the Grand Prix, yeah. But yeah, no, my problem was the knockout tours. Right, yeah. They're like the hardest ones. It just kept happening that I'd be leading the whole damn thing and I'd be on the final straight on a couple of the tracks and they would just zing by. Like, not even, like, sometimes not even blue shelled or anything like that. They would just suddenly go, no, I'm gone. Like, because they'd get boosts or something. And I don't know. It's just bloody annoying. Nothing you can do about it. Mario Kart.
Mario Kart. The Mario Kart.
When I played I played a tiny bit more Starlink as well.
Okay.
Tiny, tiny, tiny bit. Because a bit of me was like, I need to finish some games.
Yeah, ideally. At least one.
Have you Mario Karted at all, Zach? Or has it been... Because you pretty much played Donkey Kong in one sitting.
Well, I had to go and do the post game, so that's what I did of Donkey Kong this week.
I forgot, we've got a bit of a segue game, haven't we?
Do we?
Well, we went and played some more.
Oh, right. After we made a video, which is not off on the site yet, but will be in next week, I guess.
Yeah, Zach and I carried on playing a bit more Full Metal Furies. Which I won't talk about too much here. Just know that it's the game that Celador made after Rogue Legacy. It's pretty good. Go check out the video next week.
I guess we might continue playing that some more.
Yeah,
basically, we might try and get through it. Although, like, it's hard to tell because we are probably still quite early in the game. But the secrets seem like fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, the secrets in that thing seem like a doozy because, like, even after... You'll see in the video, we have no idea what they're on about, basically. But even after another lengthy session, I don't think we know what they're on about.
Like, maybe we have an idea about one of the four things that we found.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah. But it's a pretty fun, if fairly simple video game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it has the look of Rogue Legacy. Like, you can definitely tell.
You can definitely tell. Segway.
Yeah. Yes, I did play that. But yeah, I finished the post-game of Donkey Kong Bonanza. It turns out it's not nearly as big as I thought it was.
Oh, okay.
Like, I'd only briefly looked at the list and been like, yep, there's gaps in there for more bananas, but it's not really not really like how in Odyssey, because in Odyssey you'd go back and there'd be the like the moon cube, and then you'd punch that and it would spawn like however many more bananas
or moons. More moons,
but it doesn't do that in this game. There's only like one or two more in most levels, and then there's like the big chunks are like the 10 extra you get for going back to each of the elders and doing the weird the weird bonanza rehearsal, which is basically just what like an extra long challenge room broken into five steps with like two bananas each, where it's just like use that bonanza power to the maximum extent, like how well do you know the bonanza power skills or whatever, use them in these in this long extra long puzzle, which is kind of nice, but you know,
test your strength.
It doesn't really
test your bonanza.
It doesn't really do really much else that you haven't already been doing, except for maybe and somehow still even in these very specifically set up challenge rooms still manages to fall into the same problems of like the bonanza powers kind of override puzzles sometimes. Like pretty much the first thing you do in the Kong bonanza, it's reusing a setup that they've had in a puzzle before, where you have I think it was in the trailer as well, you have like spiky balls that are running down a channel that you have to get past. And because this is in the bonanza thing, you're locked into the Kong bonanza, so you can't, you know, fly over them or whatever. And in the other version of this, like the earlier game version, which is easier, they basically give you explosive rocks so you could like dig a hole and then all the spiky balls roll into the hole. Like that, and then they're out of the way and then you can just walk across.
Right.
And so in this version, you don't get the explosives. And I was like, well, this is kind of awkward. How do you get past them? And I initially tried using the turf surfing, because that will also like bump the spiky balls out of the way, providing you're maintaining enough speed.
Okay.
So I was trying to do that, but then like trying to navigate up this wiggly channel while turf surfing or across and having to jump off onto each ledge every time, that kind of kept screwing me up. But then I was just like, wait a minute, this whole thing is made of concrete and I'm in Kong bonanza. So I just dug straight down and tunneled under the whole thing and then just came up on the other side.
Oh.
And it's like, that can't be the actual solution, can it?
I mean, that's pretty funny if it is.
Kind of.
They were just like, yeah, by the way, you don't need to do this.
So yeah, I was like, maybe that was the intended solution, it's hard to tell. And the only other part I got stuck on was in one of the other bonanza powers things, because it wasn't even to do with the bonanza power, it was just a weird mechanic that I'd kind of forgotten. Well, it's a weird mechanic that I had seen happen before but had never been used as a mechanic in the game at any point apart from this.
Oh.
Where like if a chunk of terrain falls into a barrel cannon, the barrel cannon shoots it out.
Oh, okay. Right.
And like, that's just a comedy thing that can happen throughout the rest of the game, but in this one case, it's like, this is how you actually solve this puzzle. Matters, and right. I'd kind of like forgotten that was a thing that you could do intentionally.
Huh.
So yeah.
That's kind of a fail if it doesn't like lead you towards that in any way, because it's kind of not obvious, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's not really a way you could indicate to do that, really, I don't think.
Yeah, I guess.
Unless you like made it incredibly obvious the opposite direction, kind of like a Metroid way where it just like shows you the animals doing the wall jump, and then you're like, oh, I have to wall jump.
Yeah.
But yeah, and the funny thing about that was like I solved that puzzle a completely different, awkward way. And then I was like, okay, so that's not the way to do it. So how do the fuck you do it? And I stood there for like a couple of extra minutes just looking at it and being like, there's nothing else here to like work with. There are no other like things I can trigger or anything. So what the fuck was it? And it's like, oh, you just throw the chunk of stuff into the barrel cannon. Because the way I did it was really awkwardly like, if you stand right on the very edge of the platform that you're standing on, you can like throw the chunk far enough to hit some of the bottom targets, but not the top ones. But you can also jump and throw to get like a tiny little bit of extra distance, and that will just barely make it if you're standing right on the edge. I guess that's maybe a failure of that puzzle design as well, because you can solve it that way by doing a really inconveniently precise jump throw.
Yeah, I kind of like it when you can solve puzzles in a weird alternative way by like being very precise.
Yeah, I suppose. But the weird alternative way was like the real puzzle was actually the real solution.
It was the real puzzle, yeah.
So yeah, I cleared that up, got to the end, sort of thought about doing like actual 100% completion. It did grind out all the discs, because that's actually real easy. Like, there's 110 music discs that you can get, and obviously you'll just get some of them through the as you're going through the game naturally, because it's just a random drop. But then you get the final costume for Pauline, which is also the costume you get if you use the amiibo. So you could have had this right from the start of the game if you've got that amiibo. It's the one that gives you an extra drop rate on discs. And then also towards the end of the game, there's just like a fight arena where a bunch of enemies spawn, and you could like reset that by just resetting the terrain on the level, and that resets all the triggers as well. So you could just like jump into that fight arena, kill everything, teleport back, reset the terrain, jump into that fight arena again. Just do that over and over with the increased drop rates. I barely took any time at all. It's like I was getting like six of the discs every time I went through that arena. So I cleaned that up real quick. And I was like, okay, so what about the skill tree? Can you max that out? And it turns out, in a kind of un-Nintendo-y way, not really. Or like it's actually a giant pain in the ass if you want to. You actually don't have enough skill points to get everything, kind of. Because you're not going to have enough skill points to get it through like the normal progression of the game, but it, like Odyssey, you can buy bananas for a collectible, the banana chips you can buy bananas with. So technically you can get infinite bananas by collecting more banana chips and then trading them in and buying them like you can with coins and moons in Odyssey. But the trouble with that was like, I bought as many as I could with however many chips I'd accumulated over the whole game. And then I looked at the numbers and calculated how much more. I was like, this is going to be a fucking ridiculous amount of grinding to get enough bananas, because it's like 5 bananas per skill point, and then it's like 100 chips per banana. And just because I wanted to see, I like looked up what people were saying was the most efficient way to grind chips, and then I went and did that, and it's like, this method takes like 20 seconds to get like 40 chips. And it's like, this is not fast. That means I have to do a whole minute's worth of grind to get one extra banana, and it takes 5 bananas per skill point, and I've still got to get like another 10 skill points. Like, this is not going to be a quick process.
That's about 10 minutes.
No, 10 minutes, not total. Plus, you're having to like jump in and out of this, like reset this battle challenge over and over or whatever to grind them as quickly as possible. It's like, it's not super different from how I did the grind at the end of Mario Odyssey to get the like 9,999 coins you need to buy all the fancy costumes or whatever. Play that one level that gives you a lot of coins over and over, one mini level. But yeah, I was like, yeah, I don't really want to do this. Also, not as interesting a reward of just filling out the skill tree as buying costumes in Odyssey was. That was the reason you grinded the coins, the extra money in Odyssey, was to buy expensive costumes.
Because the skill tree, it's like, you're not going to use those skills that much.
No, especially because you've probably been prioritizing. You finished the game, and also you've been prioritizing the skills you actually want anyway.
That you wanted, yeah.
It was quite interesting that, like, the post-game bonanza rehearsal things have a check on them of how many bananas you've collected total. So obviously I'd already gone way past these checks because I'd been getting 100% of the bananas as I was going through the game anyway. But if you'd been mainlining the main game, you would have to go and do quite a lot of the other bananas before you could do the bonanza rehearsals in the post-game anyway.
Right.
But then they also suggest that you should have all the skills of that, all the skill upgrades for that bonanza unlocked as well, to actually make the puzzles possibly possible at all, but also just easier, I suppose. Which is interesting, because it's like, it's not just a banana check in some ways, it's actually also which skills did you spend your skill points on check.
Well, yeah, because does that make them potentially impossible?
Yeah, I couldn't necessarily tell whether they would be actually impossible. I suppose. Well, I was trying to think of, like, because maybe the ostrich one where you have to drop the egg bombs. I don't remember if you start with an egg bomb by default, or whether that is a skill you have to unlock to even have one, or whether whether that skill unlock is only adding the more to it. I don't actually remember. So yeah, that maybe is a way that could have potentially been impossible, but yeah, I got through all that and finished it. And that's probably that. I don't think I'm going to grade out those last skill points to get true 100%. And I watched the speedrun just to see how ridiculous that was.
How did they do it?
Well, it's not super like glitchy or anything. It is kind of funny because
not yet, anyway.
Well, you sure? Well, it's a Nintendo game. They might not get that many glitches out of it.
Yeah, true.
But it is kind of funny because the main thing about the speedrun is you just never collect any bananas.
Wait, what?
Not a single banana.
I think they pick up one of like the big five bunches you get from destroying a boss just so they can unlock like one skill point.
Hmm.
But like that's it. You just bypass all the bananas.
Weird.
Which is pretty funny. It's like he loves bananas except in the speedrun, but he doesn't want any.
The DK starvation run.
Too fast.
Too fast. Two bananas.
Or five bananas, I suppose.
Roughly two. What else have you been playing?
The only other thing I've been playing was we finished Abiotic Factor.
Oh, cool.
So we got through that. And the ending is kind of disappointing in... I was trying to work out why it was disappointing so much, because, like, it... Again, as you might expect from this game, it is a kind of an analogue of Half-Life, of how Half-Life ends. But I think the problem that I have with it is, like, in Abiotic Factor, it's, like, more explicitly a bad ending rather than in Half-Life, where it's just kind of ambiguous.
Right, yeah.
Because obviously in Half-Life, you fight, you're going into the final boss battle, and you know it's a big boss, and you fight him, and then at the end, it's just like, G-Man's like, well, you did good on that, or whatever, but whatever. He just takes you away. There's no, like, celebration for your victory, really. G-Man says you did probably a good job, and then you go into stasis.
Probably a good
job. Yeah, probably. But, like, I was trying to think of that in the context of Half-Life. Like, at the time, did that feel disappointing? That there was no real closure to that, or no victory to that?
Hmm.
I mean, it's not like games were very cinematic in 98, obviously, so, like...
No.
Was that enough?
Yeah, probably might have been, right? You might not have needed.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I've done it. Cool.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like the end of Quake, where you teleport into the dude and teleport, and then you just stand there, and then it just ends.
Yeah, you just get a statue and some text. Yeah.
But you're talking to the G-Man at the end of Half-Life.
Yeah, so it was, cool. Like, cool. More so than other games of the time, probably.
Mm.
Yeah, it had the whole speech, and then you even had a choice at the end. Like, yeah, it didn't do anything, choice. But yeah.
But yeah,
and no choice that was like a on purpose highlighting of the fact that you never had any choice.
Yeah. So it's like that at the time, that probably wasn't even disappointing then. And then obviously with the future context of it being like this helpful lead into Half-Life 2's story, it's like, oh yeah, that improved that ending in a way.
I wonder if we cared less back then.
Well, probably about, that also.
Like, just about like, oh, but I need to know. Like, was that not as big
but that
a draw
same
for
year,
us?
Like, Ocarina had like the most epic ending ever.
Sure. Yeah, I suppose.
And it's still better than the current Zelda. Well, not this one, which I famously haven't got to yet. But,
yep, you'll see.
But I hear that it's an improvement on the Breath of the Wild ending.
Well, yeah, definitely. But yeah, we got through the end of Abiotic Factor, and like it is an analogue for Half-Life, but like it's more explicitly a bad ending, which maybe kind of makes it suck more. Because it's weird because after you get about a third of the way into the game, you come across the like G-Man equivalent, basically. Except in this game, he actually like talks to you directly and basically starts prompting you on things you should probably be doing to progress towards your escape of the facility. And then obviously at the end, it turns out he's a bad guy in this case, rather than G-Man's neutralness.
Yeah, the unknown.
But and then it also suffers slightly from like protagonist is dumb situation where like you come to the entrance to the final boss arena and the G-Man S guy is there, but he's also standing next to just one of the other scientists because as you've been going through the game, some like you see other recurring character scientists who are also like theoretically escaping alongside you. So at various points they show up and discuss how they've been managing the whole situation. But like at the end, you've got the G-Man guy and the other scientist guy, and they're standing right next to each other. And the other scientist guy is like, you know, this guy is actually not who he says he is, and he's really bad, obviously. Like, you're not actually going to follow his plan, are you? And then you do, obviously, because you're dumb. Protagonist dumb. And you don't have a choice. But yeah, that's...
Sounds like it's perhaps should have presented you a choice then, or
well, unless it's a hidden choice that we didn't know or something. Yeah. Something else you can do at that point. But yeah. And I mean, I guess it could also still theoretically set up for a sequel or like more content, post one content or something.
Sure.
Because they could just continue that story. The evil G-Man just sort of disappear at the end after you've done what he wanted. He's just like, bye. I'll leave you to deal with this, I guess.
Later, potatoes.
And it's not like... It's like... The thing you do right at the end for the big final boss battle, which is very much like Half-Life, you know, it's a big giant alien monster or whatever that you're fighting, obviously. But, like... That's not necessarily... Apart from what the, like, other scientists who turn up after you've done the fight and the other things the G-Man guy is saying, it's like, it wouldn't necessarily seem that bad without that context, because throughout the whole progression of the rest of this game, it's not like you haven't completely fucked up other things in the progression of your escape. Like, pretty much the first thing you do unleashes various monstrosities upon the whole facility.
Mm.
Apart from the ones that were already there from the initial disaster. It's like you've already unleashed several other bad things in your attempts to escape. So this ending wouldn't necessarily seem as bad as it is if everyone wasn't telling you that it is. If it had been ambiguous, it probably wouldn't have seemed so bad. But yeah, we got through the end of that. And it was weird because that game also has a slight problem of like not revealing things to you unless you do specific things, particularly in crafting. Like, if you don't craft an item that is the prerequisite to another item, you'll never know that item exists.
Oh.
Like, for a long time, we knew there was a jetpack, because, like, when you go into some of the portal worlds, there's a debuff that shows up that says, like, some of your equipment won't work in this portal world. Obviously to stop you, like, cheesing it or whatever. And it has the icon of a jetpack. And we were like, okay, so obviously that's logical. They would restrict the jetpack to not work in these specifically designed puzzle environments, essentially.
Yeah.
So we were like, okay, so where the fuck's the jetpack? But then, like, midway through the game, you find the crafting blueprint for, like, the Half-Life equivalent long jump pack, which is, like, it's not really, like, the Half-Life one. It's more just, like, you have, like, a double jump, essentially.
Right.
But, like, that pack is the prerequisite for the jetpack, but we never needed it because it's just, like, the levels aren't really designed to use it. And we had the gravity cube, which gives you, like, floaty jumps instead.
Oh.
So we were just, like, we never crafted that, and therefore we never got the blueprint for the jetpack. And that also applies to even more obscure things, which are really annoying. Like, we could never work out what some of the cooking and soup recipes needed as one of their ingredients. And we just assumed it was just like a plant or something we hadn't found at all. But then later when I was playing solo on my solo save, I found out...
You put the jetpack in there.
No, I found out what the recipe was, which is melted ice cream.
What?
Which means you have to pick up ice cream from one of the places it spawns and specifically not consume it until the decay bar goes down and it turns into melted ice cream, and then you learn that that is the ingredient that those recipes need.
Okay, I can kind of see that.
So yeah,
you don't need to move it close to heat source or anything.
Well, you can. That does actually help. In fact, there's almost a hint, because there's a specific building that you unlock at some point in the tech tree that's just the warming cabinet
right.
that heats up things you put inside it. And there's no reason for that to exist except for keeping coffee warm or melting ice cream. But, like, you still wouldn't know that. It melts ice cream faster, which is nice if you want to mass produce these foodstuffs that need melted ice cream. But you wouldn't know that unless you knew melted ice cream was a thing you wanted. And then if you don't know that, the warming cabinet seems kind of pointless.
Is melted ice cream specifically different to just making a flavoured cream?
No, it should have just been a different recipe, really. The ice cream is made of, like, an egg equivalent, a milk equivalent, and a sugar equivalent. Alien versions of those three things, basically. But yeah, that's the slight problem with that game's crafting, is, like, they don't really tell you, but you should just try and craft everything you possibly can, just in case it then unlocks the recipe for something else.
Yeah.
even if you're not actually going to use the thing that you're crafting. But yeah, we finished that up, and I don't know if we're going to... Well, I mean, there's not really any reason. I know that we certainly missed a couple of, like, portals, like the portal worlds that you can get into, but they're obviously side content because we didn't need them to get through to the end of the story or anything. So I don't know if we'll go back and do that, or, you know, maybe there'll be a post-release update that will add more content, and then we'll just catch them up in that process.
Mm.
I get the feeling that's probably what's going to happen. I think we're pretty much done with playing it in co-op. I may continue to play the solo run a little bit more. But, you know, once you've seen how that game works, it's not randomized or anything. It is a fixed,
right, yeah,
linear thing. It is slightly interesting in solo that because I've been playing with the stealth armor, so I'm just backstabbing everything essentially. Which does make it slightly interesting, mainly because, like, when you backstab a thing, that's when you uncloak. So you're trying to, like, look at all the enemies stationed around the place or patrolling and be like, which one of these enemies can I stab while I'll still be out of view of them all until I recloak after the backstab animation finishes. It's stealth that's actually sort of interesting in that way, but, you know, it's still stealth. But obviously, you have quite a lot of different guns that you can then break into after the stealth fails. And the stealth armor isn't even that, like, unarmored, essentially. It's still relatively heavy armor. So you're not, like, completely exposed when you fail the stealth. And I made the containment unit for that thing that follows you around all the time. So I solved that problem for me in my solo game.
Oh, right. Yeah, that seems important.
Although, as we discovered in multiplayer, there's actually a second one of those that you find later on.
No.
But it only exists in the icy area. Like, it can't come out of the ice environment. So that's slightly restricted on its following you around,
a bit less. Can you contain that one as well?
Yes, you can. Theoretically, you can use the exact same containment unit again to contain that one, but you have to build it in the icy environment to keep it in there. So yeah, that was the end of that game. It gets quite a lot more, well, I mean, sort of in the same way as Half-Life, you get quite a lot more into, like, shooting things rather than just exploring as you progress through the game, which sort of makes sense. You become more powerful, find more cool, weird technology to make stupid guns out of. I don't think it ever got really stupid with the guns. Like, there's a laser cannon and you know, there's no Gauss gun or Egon gun or anything.
Yeah, right. Oh, that's okay.
No mysterious
Or maybe balls. There is, and we just never found the recipe to make it. Maybe we didn't pick up the right stuff or craft the right prerequisites to find them.
Seems a shame that they wouldn't signpost it a bit if it did exist.
If there are really cool guns.
Kind of missing out, yeah.
I think I talked about it last time, but, like, one of the awkward things about the laser weapons is that it changes them from being able to charge from the normal power grid to laser-specific stuff, which means that you can no longer use, like, the free charging stations that are dotted around the place to charge those guns. You have to build one specific for laser weaponry. Not that the building is especially expensive. It's more just like you have to plan ahead for that. Bring those buildings with you to the new area and, like, set up a temporary charging station or whatever. And obviously that becomes easier the more technology you have for, like, teleporting around. Like, quite early on, you get the...
So you can backtrack easily.
Yeah. I mean, as I said, the levels are all, like, quite looped, so they loop back on each other. But then at a certain point, you also get, like, the personal teleporter that can teleport you. It's only one direction, so it teleports you back to the most recent crafting bench that you're at. So you can essentially have an instant teleport back to home base, at least. And then the two-way teleporters are, like, quite late game and very expensive, so... We only really set up one of those, but you can do that as well.
You just set up two one-way teleporters next to each other.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could just, like, charge up, build a duplicate personal teleporter linked to a different crafting bench and, like, store it in a container somewhere. So you could just, like, go one way, swap, and then go back the other way. So that wouldn't work, because then they'd be at the wrong ends. You'd have to take them back to where they started again. So, yeah. Finish that. That was all I did.
Game!
Dan, did you finish Tears of the Kingdom yet?
No, damn it. I had a chance to weigh it. next time. I should be freed up next time to finish it off. That maybe that's what I'll do next weekend as a reward for getting through all this stuff.
Yeah.
Is there a bank holiday coming up? August.
End of August, I think.
Next week, the following weekend. Okay.
End of August.
And then Rob can finish Clair Obscur and start playing Tears of the Kingdom again so he can fucking finish it.
And then we can do the spoiler cast.
Then we can finally talk about the ending.
Yeah.
And then Rob will be prepared for Age of Imprisonment, I guess.
Oh, crap, yeah.
Like, I am fully ready to do the ending now. I just need to do it, I think. I've got all the armor and stuff I wanted.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
That probably means you'll just go in there and it'll be too easy.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not like super overleveled or anything. I need to cook some stuff, I guess. Yeah. Probably. That especially the helps. Gloom, the anti-gloom stuff. I don't really have any of that.
Yeah.
Well, I never really explored the depths like super thoroughly. And I probably never will.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not sure I've got much of the... I mean, I'm pretty well geared, but I don't think I'm as far as... I didn't do any much grinding for materials. It's more of a natural, have I got this? Okay, fine, I'll upgrade.
Yeah,
but even that, even with that stuff, I feel like I'll probably be in a pretty good position, but I don't know if I've got much anti-gloom myself.
Mm.
I think I've got, how far does it go? Does it go to the one where it's like, you get the special heart, right? The extra heart. Yeah, I've got that. But.
Yeah, because you have the miner's gear that gives you one extra
gloom heart
per piece, right? So if you have the full set.
Oh, I see.
You have three hearts, essentially.
I see.
Mm.
Yeah, I think I've got one.
But I didn't even find that necessarily a problem.
No.
Like, you can't...
It's really not necessary.
If you have a couple of gloom repairing recipes, then you can just pop one of those before the final boss door or whatever, and then stack up some extra health on top of that, and then that'll be good.
And then you're good to go.
Except maybe not. I don't know.
Hmm.
Or rather, I do, though.
Oh, fine. Okay.
But you know that we don't know.
We'll get it done. Yeah, we don't know. I genuinely don't know. So, so kind of looking forward to it.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Where are we then? Are we actually early done?
Yep, wow. We are.
What's going on?
Lack of news. Thank God.
Lack of news. And honestly, not a huge amount of variety from our game playing this week. So,
if I'd had new games, I talked about both these games as new last time, even though in fact it wasn't new. And then this was just clean up.
Yeah.
Anything on the horizon for next time?
I don't know what I'm going to move on to next. Like, okay, maybe Tears, but probably. But go back to Tears and actually finish some of that off. But
well, maybe we can coordinate that.
You don't have to avoid each other's spoilers.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll probably take you about 2 weeks or less.
Oh, I don't know. Marzi is proving to be quite a challenge of late. So
fair.
It's requiring more of our time.
Indeed. Well, we've got videos as well.
On our
YouTube channel, so check those out. We got
Balatro.
What's the latest? Balatro is up.
What's
Balatro 3 is up.
Whip through it.
And then still fail.
Spoilers.
And coming up, Full Metal Furies, as you heard earlier.
Teased,
and that is coming. So look for those. And I guess we'll be back in a couple of weeks with another Salad Cast.
Theoretically.
So we'll catch you then.
Oh, I mean, maybe.
Theoretically. Yeah. I mean, we very rarely miss it.
Who knows? Who knows what will happen? Zach knows.
Yeah, we shall see. Zach knows all.
Bye.